Okay. Today we're going to be talking about a wrap up to this cycle of conference calls. This call cycle number 6. This is the 10th call in a series of 10 in this cycle. We're going to be ending this cycle, but then we'll be starting a new one towards the end of August. Our first call will I expect be July. Let's see, our next call will be probably on the mid-August, and we'll make announcements, send out announcements prior to that time. We're hoping to have the new grantees on the next cycle of calls, in addition to individuals that are interested in starting a program, and also individuals that have sustaining programs, and the mix of people who have continuing programs and the ones that just have programs awarded, and in addition to those who are interested in developing new programs, should be an interesting mix of people to interact ideas, exchange ideas, and hopefully help us all make better programs. Glow isn't going to be with us today, but she usually gives us the announcements and what happens in Washington. Basically, we're talking about a little bit of a quiet period. We are looking forward to the Brownfields 2013. It seems like a long time from now, but there is a deadline coming up beginning of August for those interested in submitting ideas for presentations. There's going to be three types of presentations: panels, roundtables, and they'll have some additional workshop sessions. If you're interested, go to the Brownfields 2013 website, and it'll give you instructions on signing up. Signing up for Brownfields 2013 is free. All you need to do is get yourself to Atlanta and make your hotel reservations early. And the rest of the conference is free of charge, and it's the best conference of the year. Talks about everything Brownfields, from the financing of it to workforce development to the legal aspects of it and the technical aspects of it. So in one convention center, we have all of the components of Brownfields and their operation. So it's definitely a good conference to attend. We recommend everyone go there and network. HMTRI will be there, as well as most of the grantees, a lot of the people in the communities who are working in Brownfields. Good place to make connections. They also have a great display area where they'll have hundreds of exhibitors, again, in all fields. EPA has a very extensive technical assistance and meet the regions. It gives you a chance to meet with your regional reps. They all have hospitality suites in addition to having very large booths where you could come and visit them and talk about your prospective grant or something you're thinking of doing in your community, or if you have a grant now, issues about your grant, and certainly your grant administrators would like to talk with you, and there's some great keynote addresses also as part of Brownfields 2013. So while it is early, it's not too early to start thinking about Brownfields 2013 and put it on your calendar, May 15th to 17th of next year. Another meeting that's coming up quite soon is the one in Alexandria. This is October 1st and 2nd. This is sponsored by HMTRI, that's our organization, in coordination with EPA. We annually have a gathering of all existing grantees, grantee alumni, and also people in the professional learning communities who show a very strong interest in starting a program in their community. We invite them to attend. This is a free workshop, and actually we can cover some of your hotel stay. You do have to pay your own transportation, and we will give instructions on signing up for that in the post-session notes. If you're very serious about signing up, I would look at the attachment that's in the post-session notes. I would also consider going if you think your community might be interested in starting a job training program. Certainly, if you're an alumni and you've been a grantee in the past, you've been to one of these workshops, or if you're a current grantee, certainly also been to one of these workshops. And it's a great place to sit and network and talk to other grantees. We're asking grantees now what they would like to talk about. We break out into small great breakout groups, and we discuss the issues that are concerning us about our sustainability of our programs, how we recruit, how we assess our communities, how we train. We talk about curriculum, very intensive conversation on recruitment and placement of grantees and participants is also part of the workshop. So it's a full day. We go from early morning to evening. And the day before, you'll also see there's a little workshop on health and safety aspect. It's a mini boot camp on health and safety, which is an integral part of all of our Brownfields grant programs. So we would also urge you to come a day early and attend that. So, and that information is also on the fact sheet that we'll be sending out in the post-session notes. That is pretty much the gist of what's happening. In today's call, we're going to be summing up the different calls that we had in this cycle. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the future and what should we be doing now in terms of our grant planning if we don't have a grant, or even if we just received a grant, what we should be doing. Certainly, everyone who's got a grant or contemplating a grant needs to thoroughly review the EPA website on brownfields. Just go to epa.gov/brownfields, and on there they have an excellent index and topics of just about every subject in brownfields, including workforce development, all of the grants. They have fact sheets on all of the grants. Probably one of the most helpful items at that site is also the index of fact sheets. You can look up by city, by state, by region, or by type of grant, those grants that have been awarded associated with brownfields. Some are training grants, some are cleanup grants, revolving loan funds, RLF grants. Some are what they call mixed or multi-use grants that involve assessment and cleanup, and some are assessment grants, but they're all listed there. And certainly it's very important to go to this site and find out who in your community or in your area or in your region is actively involved or has been involved in EPA funded activities. This is going to be very important, particularly if you're contemplating writing a new grant. It's important, one, if there's an active grant, you need to contact those people and see how you could interact with what they're doing. If it's a completed grant, you probably also need to contact them and see how the grant went, what was the progress, what are their future plans. Often the grants are starting points, and communities continue on much beyond the life of the grant. So the grant may have started and is continuing in a different form. If you're looking at a job training grant in particular, we've got a mix of grants. Some were funded, started up, and were very successful and continued on their own without EPA funding. Some were refunded. Some grants have sat out a year or two or three and are planning on refunding. Some have melded their operations into other programs. So there is a mix, but many of them are active, and there are some grants that were funded that are no longer in existence. So what you need to do is go to the index and scan out, sort out the job training grants, and particularly the ones in your community or those that are near you, and find out what the status of those grants are, who the contacts are, and try to touch base with those individuals and see where they're at. And we'll get into that, why that's important, in just a second. Another place you want to go when you, if you're just starting out, is the Brownfields Toolbox. This is a website that's been organized and it's kept up with by HMTRI. That's that's our group. We're in a cooperative agreement with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to assist communities with their job training programs. It's a very comprehensive site, and if you go to it, you'll see right off the bat a slideshow presentation of example grantees who have sent in information about their programs, and then you can find out more. It's a very good way of getting to their website, seeing what they're doing, whether it's Richmond Youth Build, Richmond Builds, Oregon Tradeswomen in Portland, Anchorage, Alaska, different Jacksonville, Florida, JFY networks in Boston, Brownfields, the Greenfields, all over the country. You can go to the site, and you can also locate all of the grantee locations, and you'll see this on the banner when you go to brownfield-toolbox.org. You will see balloons with all of the various brownfields. The red ones are red balloons are current grantees. Blue balloons are past grantees, and then there's some yellow balloons that were American Recovery and Reinvestment Act (AREA) grants that had special grants. You'll see, while they're very concentrated in the Northeast, they do spread completely around the country. And the nice thing about this is you could touch on any balloon, and it'll give you the name of the grantee, when the grant was awarded. Sometimes it'll give you a website, for example, the Absentee Shawnee Tribe of Indians in Oklahoma City, for example. There is a link to their site that would give to you directly there. National Association of Black Environmentalists, for example, that gives you their names and addresses. Same with Knight County. It would give you a link right to their website. So definitely it's a good thing to do when you're doing this early scan of whether or not you want to be doing a job training grant, what you should be doing, who in your area has got an active grant. If it's active, you want to see how you could complement what they're doing. One of the very important pieces of this is not to duplicate what someone is already doing in your community. So you definitely would not want to do the same thing if there is an active grant in your community. If there is a grant that was in your community that's no longer active, you may want to see what their issues were, and you may want to pick up where they left off, or they may have morphed into some other type of organization, and you may want to start a new program that is quite different than theirs. And so in terms of this general scan of where we're going and what you need to be doing now, you need to, of course, get your general information down from the EPA site, from the Brownfield Toolbox site, and then go to the next step. This is going to give you a good idea of what brownfields job training is all about, who's doing it, what's happening in your community, some of the challenges they've had, make some phone calls, see what they're doing. Once you've gone through this very general research, the next thing to do is to contact the EPA workforce coordinator. And we put it in the notes of the last session, but we'll put it again in the notes of this session. The EPA regional coordinators are very important. They coordinate the grants in their region, in each of the 10 regions across the country. They act as advisors, and they're your first point of contact as you develop your program. So you really want to get to know your regional coordinator, and we'll give you their names and phone numbers. It's very important to let them know that you're thinking of submitting or developing a program, even if you're just in the very early stages. They like to get a feel for it. They may be able to provide you with some leads and some contact information and places you could get additional assistance. So the first step after we've done this initial scan is to go to the workforce coordinator in your EPA regional office. We talked about doing a local scan of all the grants. You also want to look at a scan of the local EPA grants. You want to find out what, and it's also available at the EPA Brownfield site, what grants have been awarded in the community by EPA, who got them, who the contacts are, whether it was an assessment grant or a cleanup grant, whether it was a city. You want to get a feel for that. This is important because when you get into developing your grant, it's going to be very important to have a strong partner. If you look at the successful grantees, they were a mix of cities, counties, community colleges, and strong nonprofits. It helps very much to have a history with EPA funding. City governments obviously have had a strong relationship with EPA or county governments. Some nonprofits, some community colleges have, maybe not as many as cities and counties. There seem to be more cities and counties awarded grants this year, perhaps because they have a closer relationship with EPA and are more familiar with what's happening in EPA. They've processed assessments and perhaps cleanup grants, or they may have revolving loan fund programs. So it's important to contact the city government to see what they've done with EPA. What we're doing in the second phase is we're seeing who you may want to consider partnering with. You want to find a strong fiscal partner. You may be the one that's going to organize this, but it could be that you'll be needing a strong fiscal partner who will actually submit the grant, and that may be your city government or your county government. It may be a community college who has a history with EPA, but maybe has a history with Department of Labor or other federal agents, the National Science Foundation, Department of Labor, Department of Education. These would all be very helpful when you apply for your grant. Another reason it's very important to link up with someone who's had a history of federal funding is when we start talking about the auditing rules and the accounting rules. Those who are familiar with working with federal government do not have the learning curve that you would have if you started from scratch. Other strong fiscal partners might be nonprofits such as Goodwill Industries or Youth Build, perhaps Strive. These are very strong fiscal partners. They're large nonprofit organizations. There are many community development corporations, and almost all community development corporations have had a relationship with the federal government and have gone through the fiscal rigors, the rigors of audits and reporting requirements of the federal government. So you may want to do this scan of who in your community. Again, we're saying we think we want to do a job training program. We talked to our regional rep. Now we're looking for some strong fiscal partners. Perhaps that partner is us. We may be in one of those nonprofits or community college or county. If you are in one of those organizations, you may want to find out who in your organization has administered these grants, and you want to link up with them to see if it's feasible to go ahead. You're going to contact all these people, and it may be a tribe, and there may be some a fiscal agent at a tribe that has had experience, again, with the federal government. So we're first lining up our fiscal agent to develop a strong fiscal capability, which will be important when we start writing a grant and proposing our program. We're going to need someone that has strong training capabilities. And this may be your organization, it may be a local community college, it may be a university. If it's a private sector company, keep in mind you're going to need to go out for three bids before you could actually award training to them. I'm running through these things kind of almost in the order of importance, and it may be counterintuitive. You might think, well, maybe the training entity is number one, but really, when we go through the order of how it turns out that the sticking points and the problems people have, it seems like that the order I've been giving you seems to be the one that we want to follow. Then after the training capabilities, the next thing is the strong recruitment, training, placement, and facilities and leveraging partners. We're talking about people who can provide strong recruitment services or placement services, people who have links to community. Now, this may come a little later, and I'll get to that, why that may come a little later in a second. But you're also going to have to find someone that has facilities, whether it's a community college, an organized labor organization, someone you might be able to leverage funding with. It might be, again, a county government that's got hazmat capabilities, fire departments, organized labor with training facilities, or community college with training facilities. The reason I said this last part you may want to wait on is that we're not sure yet if we're developing a program where we're going to be training in our community and how we're going to be training. So the next thing you have to do is you have to do some sort of a community assessment or characterization. You're going to need to look at the demographics of your community. Is your community primarily blue collar, white collar? Do you have issues with homeless? Do you have a large veteran population, a large disabled veteran population? Do you have issues with ex-offenders having trouble finding employment? Is construction strong or weak? Are you in an old community with lots of lead and asbestos indigenous to the area? Or are you in a new community built in the 80s, 90s, where there is no lead and asbestos? These are all very important issues because in writing a proposal and developing a program, you're going to have to describe your community. What is the socioeconomic situation in your community? Now, having said that, every community is very diverse, so you're going to have pockets. You may have some suburbs that are very affluent and some areas that are very disenfranchised, and you're going to have variances all around the community. And what I'm saying is before we decide, for example, who our training partners are and our fiscal agents, and before we locate our training facility, we are going to have to see what part of this community we're going to be in, particularly if we're in a large metropolitan area, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, Boston, Miami. You do not want to locate your training facility clear across town where it's difficult for people to get to you. You're going to want to choose a training partner who would be embedded in the community. So that's why you can't choose all your partners first before you look at a community characterization and look at the demographics and the types of issues you have. At the same time you're doing your community characterization, you've got to do a scan or a labor market assessment and I'm not talking about the final one, but a general assessment in the planning stages of what kind of jobs could be available to your graduates. Are we talking about primarily public sector jobs? For example, is there a huge number of people retiring in your public sector? For example, maybe solid waste workers, wastewater workers, highway people. There might be jobs that in the public sector that they're talking about having difficulty replacing, finding trained people. This is extremely important. Do you have a strong organized labor force in your community? If you're in a northern industrialized organized labor community, organized labor may be the key and the key partner you're going to be working with in terms of your participants working with the unions, working their way into organized labor, having an opportunity to become develop apprenticeships. You're going to want to get a feel for where the demand is. What kind of major industries do you have in your community? Is it construction-based? Is it a strong manufacturing base? If you're in some southern communities, there may be no manufacturing. You may be in an area like Charleston that's developing a strong aerospace base. Or you may be in the Louisiana, Texas area where you've got a very strong chemical base and you've got tremendous amounts of chemical waste and pollutants as a result of the oil and gas industry or the shipping industry. You may be in the Texas or Pennsylvania area where shale is and fracking is a major industry, and there will be demand there. So you've got to get a feel for that. You may be in a community where it's basically service-oriented, and we're talking about services. So, again, in this general scan, before you get too far along in choosing your partners, after you've kind of settled on whether you're going to work with a city, county, community college, and getting a strong system of partners, you need to get a feel for what your demographic base, who you're going to be training, and what you're going to be training. And so if you're going to be training in wastewater or solid waste, that may give you a guidance on what kind of community college you may want to go to for training. They may have a program already in place in solid waste or in wastewater, water supply, or in chemical assessments. So you're going to want to get a feel for where that demand is before you go too far. Once you've done that, then you kind of go backwards, and you've chosen your target industry, the types of training you're going to be doing. You choose your demographic and your target community. Now you could start talking about what neighborhoods you're going to be training in, what the demographics are going to look like, and what kind of jobs those people are going to be getting. Now you can go and start choosing what I call your secondary partners. And these are the partners that will help you with training, will help you with community recruitment, will help you with placement, will help you with facilities, and also help you in leveraging your program. So what we're doing is we're putting together this jigsaw puzzle of doing general, and we're going to specific, where we're going to start now looking at what kind of training capability we need, where are they going to be located, where is our training facility going to be. People are not going to be able to perhaps go clear across town, so you're going to want to embed that in the community, or your trainers are going to have to go to the community. Your training facilities, while they're in the community, your recruitment facilities, and if you partner with community organizations, you want them embedded in the community. For example, if you're on the south side of a metropolitan area and you've already made an arrangement with some nonprofit that's on the northeast side of town, there's no relationship, and it's going to be difficult for them to be responsive to your work on the southwest side of town. So, again, you want to be careful not to have solid partners too early before you've defined your demographics and characterized your community. So what we're doing here is kind of winding you through and what you need to be doing now. And if you're contemplating a program, the next thing I would do is join our next cycle of professional learning communities, which the next cycle will start in August, towards the end of August. We'll send out post-session notes regarding this discussion. And again, all of these conversations are 30 minutes and with post-sessions notes, and then we'll also send out announcements regarding the new first professional learning community call in the new cycle, which will be, and there'll be 10 of those starting in later in August. For those of you who are thinking of starting a new program, nothing is in concrete yet, but we have a feel that the new RFP may come out around the time, hopefully around the time of the annual grantee meeting sometime in early October. If we go back to their original schedule that they used to have, the RFPs came out in the fall, were due before Christmas, and then were awarded in early spring. So this is perfect timing if you want to join the new cycle of professional learning community calls. It's free of charge. You come in and have discussions with people who have gotten grants or are considering new grants, and we'll be running through all of these aspects I just talked about in this conversation, and then we'll be, after the RFP comes out, we'll be going over all of the issues that are in the request for proposal. And it just turns out that those issues that make a good sustainable training program are the same issues that EPA looks for as they evaluate grants. EPA has done an excellent job in developing requests for proposals that pretty much, if answered and are held true, those responses will lead to a, if they're followed, will lead to a very sustainable and excellent program. So EPA is very aware of what it takes to make a successful, sustainable program, and they've required that in their RFPs when they select the grants that are being awarded. So with that, we're going to close this. And again, we don't know the exact funding next year. Some people say if we operate on a continuing resolution in Congress, could be that funding would be about the same as this year. So we're talking about 10, 12 grants, three-year grants. We'll get more details as we get closer to the RFP release. So if anyone has any questions, you could email them to me, msenew@aol.com, msenew@aol.com. And we'll put in Galo's email address and the announcement for the annual job training workshop in the post-session notes. So thanks for tuning in, and while this cycle is now completed, we'll be seeing you in the new cycle starting later in August. Thank you. Have a good day.